Welcome to the FishExplorer.com's Fly Fishing Podcast. This is a show where we talk about everything from how to fish, where to fish, what to fish for, and whatever else we want to talk about. We will talk to the legends of fishing, guides, fishermen, and anybody else who wants to talk fishing. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Good morning, evening, afternoon, everybody out there in Fish Explorer land. This is Tim Fishman Emery talking to you from the friendly confines of my home office. And there's a reason I'm in my home office. It's because I have 2.5 feet of snow out my door, and it is still coming down. I am in Highlands Ranch, Colorado. It's unreal. I think fishing season's going to take a little bit of a backseat right now because we got a ton of snow here. But it's all good. I guess Denver's got about 14 inches. The Front Range is getting dumped on, which means good water in the future. If you're just finding us today, we are at fishexplorer.com. That's right. Fishexplorer.com is the number one resource of fishing information in Colorado and fishing, tips, techniques, and all that good stuff that you can find out. So check out www.fishexplorer.com. Come join and you'll, definitely get some good mileage out of it. So this week's guest on the fishing podcast is a local legend. At least in his own mind. He is a guide, a local guide in the area, concentrates on the Front Range waters, including Clear Creek, Bear Creek, the Big Thompson, the South Platte. He has also been a competitor for the national championships, fly fishing national championships, which he actually just got back from, I believe, on Tuesday. He was one of my teammates in the 2005-2006 national fly fishing championships, where we took third place. He actually came in 10th. I came in 11th, but, you know, he got lucky that day. Our guest this week is Mr. Chris Galvin. Chris, how are you?
Fantastic. How you doing, Tim?
Great. Welcome to the show. So we were talking about the fact that you just got back from the Fly Fishing National Championships that were held around State College, Pennsylvania. Tell us a little bit about how it was, what the tournament was like, and how you did.
You know, being in Pennsylvania, it was actually my first time being in central Pennsylvania. I'm from the Midwest. I'm from Ohio. So I was kind of used to the Midwestern kind of landscape. Central Pennsylvania, though, is really hilly. Really kind of rural and beautiful. It's, you know, lots of beautiful trees that were in full color right now, lots of great drainages that we got to see. You know, I got to see them, almost all of them. I stayed with some people that I've actually guided out here in Colorado, so I had a lot of local knowledge from them, and they were great tour guides for my week that I spent out there getting ready for the tournament.
So for people who don't know, the National Fly Fishing Championships is a tournament sanctioned by the FIPS Moosh out of Europe, and it's really got some big-time rules to it, technical rules that you have to abide by. You can't have weight on your line. You can't fish with strike indicators. Your flies have to be at least 20 centimeters apart, and the goal is to catch as many fish as possible. So tell us, Chris, a little bit more about, you know, how the tournament went and so forth.
Okay, well, you know, I got there, like I said, several days ahead of time to start practicing, and the waters were great. It did take a little while to sort of decode what was in each river. We're fishing Big Fishing Creek, Spring Creek, the Little Juniata, and one more. I guess, yeah, two sections on Spring Creek, and there's one more I'm forgetting. But, yeah, they were nice rivers, and everything was looking great. We had nice fall weather, and then about a day before the tournament, some heavy rain started. And the heavy rain changed the tournament conditions drastically, and this was happening even the night of the selection for beats that we normally do. We'll have a captain's meeting and everyone will come in and we'll select, you know, randomly the beats for everyone and the teams that will be in each group. So, yeah, it really changed things and made for a frantic night before the first day of tournament fishing. once we got into the water had come up, some of them have come up where gauge would be normally like 2.5 feet. 2 days before, there was a gauge of 7 feet. So, I mean, it made it really challenging.
And this time of year, we don't get a lot of that out here, but during the spring and summer, we get a lot of that. What do you do as a fisherman you know, on water that you're unfamiliar with, when the water changes like that, what do you really, what can you do?
Well, I guess my challenge was I was focusing on the smaller, you know, regular nymphs and dry flies that might be in the water this time of year. And we'd seen them, and I'd been catching fish for them here in practice. When the water came up, you know, suddenly all kinds of bigger food items are going to get knocked loose, which can come into your arsenal and start fishing those. For example, like crane fly larvae was on one of the, you know, was in one of the rivers. Some crest bugs, you know, we know them as sow bugs, and they call them crest bugs, but that normally don't get knocked loose, and they're very steady legged. They start suddenly getting knocked loose. You can fish your bigger, you know, the normal way it goes is just bigger and brighter.
Mm-hmm.
And get your flies down if you're nymphing. Otherwise, you know, work. Some guys are working streamers with some effect. And I guess, I mean, I even caught a fish on a dry dropper type rig, which was the one fish, one of the few fish taken in the after, or in the morning, I guess, of the day where the water started coming up.
Wow, so that really puts you through a loop, especially when you've got, you know, 3 hours to fish a section of water that's probably about 200 yards long. And was it really taking that water and trying to figure out where you were going to have the best success as well?
Yeah, I mean, it just narrowed down the window of where you'd get to go. You know, you could see pretty easily what was fishable water and what looked like just absolute kayak water, you know, where it was even unnymphable, you know. I would say I even enjoy swift water, but this was just crushingly fast water.
So,
it made it really easy to see where you should be going, you know.
Yeah.
Behind the big tree that's like falling in the water there, that go there, you know, or just simple things like that.
Right. And there's no way to cross the river either.
A lot of them weren't crossable. I actually had some crossing in my afternoon session of the first day.
Uh-huh.
It just depended on the river. But yeah, it was high.
Right.
It was really easy to take a misstep and go really deep. So
yeah, that's crazy.
A lot of guys would come back to the bus looking like soaked all the way to their hair. You know,
right?
They've been taking some deep swims.
Uh huh. So, what were the results? Who were the top few guys that we may know?
Like a local guy out there who's pretty well known, I guess, now on Fly Fishing Team USA, George Daniels,
mm-hmm.
Won it.
Mm-hmm.
Followed by Norm McTima,
mm-hmm.
and then Norm got third, and then actually Lance Egan of the Salt Lake City area in Utah got second.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that were out there from Colorado, myself, Chris Galvin, Riley Cotter, Rob Colanda, Randy Hanner, and Mike Sexton are the first ones that come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's any other ones. Randy Hanner and Mike Sexton had some pretty good outings, so...
Mm-hmm.
They were the best finishers out of us.
Right, so you guys
I was kind of middle.
Yeah, you guys had a rough, kind of rough go at it, huh?
Yeah, it was just, you know, it was challenging and it was unusual both.
Right.
And, you know, it was, talk about a curveball. It was just a curveball that, we even saw that rain was coming and most of the locals were saying, oh, you know, really shouldn't do much. These are mostly
right.
spring fed, yada, 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 but it came to the point where a lot of the water was coming in from just, you know, the edges and the little tributaries and stuff and just put a ton of color in there.
Wow.
So the visibility was low.
Yeah. So you've got next year to do it again, right?
Yeah. Back at the drawing board. these competitions, like every time they really point out the flaws or the holes, I don't like to say flaws, the holes in your game, things
right.
you need to really step up and think about and start working on. So.
Right.
And this was like more heavy water stuff that I hadn't thought about,
right.
And or some, you know, having a good, well stocked, flashy streamer box would have helped, I think, too.
Right, right, right. Cool.
Where I thought I was going. Go ahead.
Okay, so you would have rather had some big, heavier streamers, some bigger nymphs, and so forth, just in your arsenal, just in case something like this happens.
Yeah, I would have been a little more prepped and prepared. It was something that, you know, I actually got a shorter notice, you know, because it came on as an alternate mm-hmm. when it was a dropout. So had a short notice. And, but yeah, I would have definitely figured out some more heavier stuff.
I did fish
streamers on a sink tip
mm-hmm.
That I had some effect with. And that was, luckily I did take in that stuff. But,
right.
You know, when you're preparing to travel for these things, you're usually just kind of dialing in on, you know, using local knowledge that you hear or things you read on the internet or calling shops or whatever.
Right, gotcha. And so, Chris, let's start talking about some local stuff here in the area. You know, now that I'm sitting here watching the snow fall and kind of just curious because it's now we're at the end of October and usually this snow doesn't come till, you know, February or March. But what's this going to do to the fishing? And then what can we do in the next month or two fishing kind of here locally? What are you kind of concentrating on?
I mean, obviously people start thinking a little more about tailwater fishing right this time of year. We have Colorado's just full of great tailwaters. You know, the Southside Drainage has several. Big Thompson's not that far. Williams Fork's not that far. And then obviously the Blue River up in Silverthorne, you know, if you don't mind the outlet shoppers, is a pretty cool tailwater running right through town. Otherwise, the Freestones still fish well, especially on the warmer days. And I like a little sun on the water, you know, not only for myself, just, you know, feel warmer, but also because I think it gets a little more bug activity going down in the stream bed. So I'd concentrate on the sunnier days from here going forward, and not to exclusion, but I think those have more productivity when you work on those days.
Right, and I would imagine that this colder weather is going to, you know, move some fish around a little bit. They're going to start getting used to getting into their winter haunts, but it's also, you know, in certain area is going to start bringing some blueing olive hatches out and some midge hatches out, don't you think?
Yeah, those are two. Midge is obviously one of the most important winter bugs that we have coming up, but blueing is still around and can be around in some of the tailwaters all year round. And those actually come out on cloudier days. So that's kind of the only exclusion to my sunny day philosophy, but I've seen bluings on sunny days and midges on crappy days. So there's no absolutes. You know, if you get the time, it's always worth going to try something out. So.
Right. I think so, too. Hey, Chris, now, this time of year, this question came up at a Trout Unlimited meeting, Denver Trout Unlimited meeting the other day that we were at, and Pat Dorsey was there, and Pat didn't really quite answer it the way I thought it could have been answered. But the question was pretty much, on one of these winter days, when you're up on someplace like Cheeseman Canyon or something like that, and you see a midge hatch, and you see fish kind of starting to hit the surface, what is your focus? How do you determine what they're eating and how to get to those fish and what you're going to do to catch them? And do you go dry or do you kind of go dry dropper? What do you do to catch those little selective fish that are only in one little pool, but they're rising? What's kind of your thought process?
Yeah, I mean, kind of analyzing the rise is important. You know, you can usually tell the difference between the fish mouth or seeing just a dorsal and tail type take on the surface. I usually like those transitional flies, like a sprout type midge, where you have the body of the fly underneath the water's film and then a parachute or something other device holding it up above the top of the water, where you're kind of in that transitional or merger phase. I think you'll catch more fish that way, even when there's dries on the water. Those patterns seem to produce.
Something.
The other option I do is I'll throw like a dry fly with a completely unweighted emerger behind it, usually like a foot or two behind it, and pick up fish on one or the other. You know, just kind of give them an option. You know, are you willing to come up and break the surface, or are you just going to give me a little head move at the top, you know, and take the emerger? So that's kind of how I spread it out.
Right. Are you using, do you drop your tippet size down a little bit, or, you know, are you using longer leaders? What are you thinking when you're doing that?
Yeah, you do want longer leaders, and, you know, lighter line does not hurt. You know, 6X is kind of like my normal tailwater approach, but if you're a huge fish, you know, you may have to, you know, fish 5 just to keep the fish from breaking off or taking 20 minutes to land. So, I don't want to promote that, but yeah, I mean, it may require a finer tippet. But a lot of times I think anglers lean towards saying, hey, it's a pattern, or hey, it's a sick line, that's why I'm not catching fish. But there's probably some other presentation things you can think about. Presentation will still outfish a pattern, you know.
Right, and
that's another important thing to not give up on.
Yeah, and you hit that on the head. That's been my theory, and that's what I preach a lot, is it's presentation. It's not necessarily the certain exact pattern. It's really the presentation to get that fish to eat. You got to be close in the winter because there's less bugs, right?
Yeah, and you know, you do have to start dialing in, but usually like a simple black and white or one of the browns in color, you know, it's a really not all you need, but it's, you know, it's a great starting point to fill in your winter box. But yeah, I mean, for like dry fly fishing or the dry dropper or the dry emerger stuff like I was talking about, it may just be a longer leader or it may just be casting, letting your cast land a little more softly on the water. Maybe mm-hmm. your cast is hitting so hard that it alerts every trout in the pool. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you're not timing the rising, you know, mm-hmm. that you're throwing it right after you see the rise where you really should probably wait 5 or 10 seconds, you know, to throw that fly.
Right, right.
Things like that.
And maybe it's the angle of your cast or the drift that you're getting to those fish as well.
Yeah, or maybe your feet are cold, so you stood up on a rock in the middle of the pool, you know, and you're standing up there like standing out like a sore thumb. The fish may completely see you and still focus on its natural food,
mm-hmm.
but also, you know, just kind of see that you're there and mm-hmm. really be a little more selective of what it's eating.
That's some great information. And then, so, you know, if you're not seeing anything rise, what's your next step? What's your next process here in the winter?
I usually little fish, like I usually fish a nymph of two bugs, typically, a big and then something small, and you know, or I might even go like blue wing to midge, or you know, stonefly to midge. It kind of depends on the tailwater and the food sources, but there's still some things moving around. Mm-hmm. Even some of the bigger mayflies move around. But yeah, midge is a great place to start, as are the blue wing nymphs, because blue wing nymphs are swimmers, so
right.
they kick around and move around on their own.
Right, right.
And are definitely in the drift.
Right.
Some of the tailwaters have mysis shrimp. Mm-hmm. There are some expert mysis shrimp fishermen out there. I know that it's a hit or miss proposition. But yeah, I've thrown those with success on the blue.
Mm-hmm.
Below the dam too.
The blue and the frying pan and the tailor are great places to go fish that stuff. You know, the one thing I like about the fall winter fishing is that there are not nearly as many people around. You know,
yeah, and you know, the guide season slows down in the winter. Fish will still eat, but what I always tell people is, you know, the people just don't come. They don't want to stand up there and be cold.
Mm-hmm.
They're shortened days. And, you know, the other reason is they're probably pretty smart mm-hmm. why they don't want to get out there. But it's a great time for me to finally get on the water and have some fun and hone my skills.
Yeah, they're not as crazy as us, huh?
Exactly.
Hey, so, you know, we're talking about rivers, but let's talk about lakes a little bit here in the winter before they freeze up. I think the fishing's going to really turn on after this. I was fishing Quincy the other day. It took me a while to dial it in and find where the fish were, but I finally did. And I know the water temperature is dropping, so fishing the lakes is still good this time of year if you can stand the chill.
Yeah, they're still around. And they're opportunistically feeding. They know the big winter chill is coming, and they'll take sometimes streamers, definitely leeches, some of your bigger stuff. You can still get away, you know, fishing your typical lake stuff, but yeah, fishing like the leech or something like that is obviously a great way to take your fall/winter transitional fishing
mm-hmm.
fish. So
yeah, I was getting a couple of hits on you know, blue wing emergers, which was fun as they were coming up. So I think the lake fishing still, at least for the next month until it really freezes, is going to be fantastic. And who knows what this winter is going to hold for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll have a lot of seesawing like we normally do. You know, like next week I saw it's supposed to be back in the mid-60s. It'll mm-hmm. probably. We'll probably be wondering like what happened to all the snow and forgetting about it, you know, by then. So I'm hoping I can just get through this without being too cabin crazy.
Well, Chris, we're running out of time. Chris Galvin, tell us how people can get a hold of you. What phone number and email, and then you know, tell us that one place you're going to go fish next week.
Actually, my secret spot. No, actually. Yeah, I'm Chris Galvin. Give me at galvinguiding, galvin guiding at gmail.com. Phone number is 303-520-4656. I book through Colorado Trout Hunters. And next week, I don't know, I'll probably be on Clear Creek.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing any spawning fish, but I'll be hitting Clear Creek in the next week or so.
Okay. Well,
for a little more river activity.
Fantastic. I appreciate your time. As you know, we always enjoy everybody listening to the Fish Explorer podcast here on Fish Explorer. And Chris, we'll talk to you again here in the near future, and probably once spring hits, we'll start talking about it, fishing again. I'll tell you what, if you ever get the chance to go fishing with Chris Galvin, he is as techie as it gets. He's very analytical. I know we've talked about this before, but he really gets down and dirty and figures out what's going on. Very good guy. I'm surprised he hasn't had more success in the national championships, but, you know, that's the way it goes. So, you know, I know we kind of ended that saying that we weren't going to talk fishing until spring, but you all know that's full of hobbaloo because we are definitely talking fishing all winter long. And even though I am sitting here watching the snowfall, and it's going to be funny in a year when we look back on this, and probably next year at this date, it will be probably no snow and sunny, and we'll be fishing every day, and it'll be great. But as of right now, 24 inches of snow on my deck. That's the way it goes. So hopefully you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions or comments, please email me at tim@fishexplorer.com. Send it out to all your friends. Tell them all about it. Like we've been talking about, Fish Explorer has some great things coming along this winter. So it'll be a good source of information. You'll know when the lakes are frozen, when you can get ice fishing. And we'll probably start talking a little bit about ice fishing because I need to learn how to do that. Being a fly fisherman, I don't ice fish very much, but I want to get into it. So in the meantime, make sure you guys go out there and enjoy. Hope you guys are shoveling as much as I am because I like to commiserate together. And of course, as soon as it clears up, and even there are probably people out there today, get out there and make sure you go fishing.